755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. All right, welcome back to 755 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic, and I'm with my co-host Eric O'Flaherty. What's up, Eric?
What up?
And we got a special guest today, the return of the Aussie, the mad Aussie. He's a celebrity now, so I don't know. We're lucky he's even given us 15 minutes. But Peter Moylo is back with us. What's up, Moylan?
What's going on, fellas? It's been a while.
Well, we got some news just as we're going on the air here, so that's why we're a little late for you folks. But what are your first thoughts on Kenley? I guess we'd be more worried if this was the first time, but he has dealt with this several times in the past.
Yeah, he dealt with it in Colorado with LA. So
irregular heartbeat, for those who've missed it, he's gone on the 15-day IL.
Yeah, it's a little, obviously anything to do with the heart is a little bit troubling, but he's dealt with it before. It's something that he manages, and I think he'll be fine. Yeah. The question then becomes what happens in the interim for the next 14 days in that closer's role for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and we talked about you usually out in Colorado, the altitude, he's got to be careful not go back-to-back. But and I know we're just speculating, but that inning the other night against the Dodgers was quite stressful. The two outs, I think he was one strike away, right?
Yeah, he threw a couple of really nice cutters to Thompson, and then he just somehow kept fighting off and literally capped it over Olsen's head. And I mean, that's got to be – the emotions were already high.
Yeah.
Leading into that, and then for him to have that kind of inning, you know, he was literally quarter of an inch away from ending that inning and walking off, and then he has to throw more pitches, and then it's like the letdown of that. Maybe it all just came to a head, and he's going to take 2 weeks off.
And that's after striking out the side against his former team the night before, which was really impressive. He threw harder than he's thrown all year. I mean, he was like a mile and a half harder than he's thrown all year in that game. Over 98
to 97, 98,
yeah. 98.2. Yeah, I mean,
it's gas.
So anyway, I don't know. What's your first thoughts? I think the obvious guy is Minter, right? You got to go with Minter as the main guy.
Yeah, I think I think he's earned that chance. He just keeps propelling himself up the totem pole from the start of the year with the way that he's throwing. Like we just talked about a little bit before, the changeup for me, and I know that sounds strange to say that, but it's become such a weapon for him against right-handed hitters that it's been a little bit off the last few outings. And I think that's the one thing that if he gets that back and feel for that back, which he threw a couple of good ones last outing, but if he can get that back consistently, I think he'll be fine in that closer's role until Kenley comes back. And then look, if it happens to not work out, then there's plenty of options out there that can jump in. Obviously it's not ideal. Matzik has just gone on a rehab assignment this morning too.
Yeah, he starts tonight at Augusta. He'll pitch for the first time.
So he's probably 2 weeks away, maybe a week away. I don't know. Depends on how much. I know he's been throwing a lot, so I don't know what the schedule is going to be. It's not like he has to go down and build up.
Yeah, Snit said a few times at least.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe they're rushing back a little sooner than they would have in this situation. But, I mean, if this would have happened 2 weeks ago, I would be like, nah. You're not going to miss a beat with Minter jumping in there because Minter at the time was literally the best reliever in the majors, probably.
Yeah.
You know, his numbers said he was. But he said he struggled a couple of times recently, giving up a couple of home runs. But like you said, maybe that's the issue and he can make that adjustment. But, yeah, they got other options. Another what's going to sound kind of crazy for people who've maybe not, you know, given this guy a lot of thought, but Dylan Lee has been terrific. Mm. Since the Braves brought him up and pitching some pretty big innings too.
Yeah. Especially the other night. This is the first time we really saw him in a high leverage one run game in the seventh against your rival. Just said, no worries. I'll take care of that. He's been, doesn't matter what situation. I called him the other day. I called him the Arcia of the bullpen because it doesn't matter what situation you put him in, whether he pitches in 6 days or 5 days or whatever, he just goes in there and just dots the bottom of the zone, locates with all like, he's just really good.
Yeah, and that is what that's what Snit said about him too. The versatility is what really stands out about him. Yeah. He's a guy that brought up
closer though. That's a big jump.
Yeah, no doubt. He had he's got 11 appearances this year. 0.59 ERA, 0.848 WHIP, 13 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 15 in the third innings.
Was one of those walks intentional?
I think so. Snit said it's like he's kind of crossed that threshold of being a guy, being a key guy, but obviously being a guy is what they say. He's worked on his slider from the get-go, from the first time we sent him down, and it's real. I kind of felt like he was a strike thrower when we brought him up last year and had a look at him. Sometimes you forget how he's a big, strong guy, and he's a versatile guy with his ability to go multiple innings, pick a guy off, whatever, so he gives you a lot of good looks out there.
Like that. That's a great description. That's perfect, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, whoever you move into the closer's role gives him an opportunity to keep climbing, you know, throwing more important innings.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, too. Like, look at what they've been able to do with the bullpen so far. No one's had a real role. So just like it's now just what fucking let's just get through the game. Whatever happens.
Right. McHugh, whoever, matchups.
Whoever ends up with the ninth ends up with the ninth. It's just another inning. And that's how they've looked at it for most of the for most of the year.
And I know Will can drive people crazy, but we said the same thing about him last year for three quarters of the year, four fifths of the year. And then he was phenomenal in the last week of the regular season and throughout the postseason. So you certainly can't write that guy off. I mean, he's got, as Eric and I have talked about, the guy's got balls, man. I mean, he steps up when it counts. So there's obviously another option because he's done it so many times.
I like him getting a full inning too. You know, he's kind of one of those guys that if you just let him create his own mess and get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He succeeds a lot with that, you know, but not too often does he just have like a 1-2-3 inning.
You know, so funny you say that because I saw him in Colorado and he got two quick outs in Colorado and then he gave up a bloop single and a homer in like two pitches and then got out of the inning. And I was like, that looks really shit on your line, but you threw the ball really well. And then since then, he had a few scoreless innings in a row, and then he looked really good. And then obviously we didn't do the last couple of games, so I wasn't as locked in. But I feel like he's been throwing the ball a lot better. And I agree. Oh, if he gets that ninth inning again, he steps up and he just does it. That's what he does.
Yeah. I wouldn't be afraid to give it to him. You know, Minner's been throwing the ball the best this year, so I'd give him a shot too. But having Will Smith as a backup is not a bad plan. And like you said, I mean, I know he drives fans crazy, but when his back's up against the wall, he finds a way to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a lot of guys that have done it here and there. I mean, McHugh, I'd put him in any situation, depending on the matchup. I mean, that guy could get it done.
He hasn't been the same since he came back, though.
I mean, he figured it out last outing.
Yeah, he had a real good one. Three innings the other night. That was a really good one. He kind of got back on track with that one. So we'll see, but that's where they are. That's the big development today. We're here in Philly for a three-game series against the Phillies. These are the two hottest teams record-wise in the National League, if I'm not mistaken. The Phillies have been a different team since Thompson took over for the fired Joe Girardi. However, they're without Bryce Harper now. I mean, that's a huge part.
It hurts for them, sucks for the game. Everything just sucks about it.
It makes that lineup 50% less scary not having him in the middle of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like everything changes. And this is a completely different scale, but similar. When you look at Michael Harris and what he did when he went to that nine spot and went to center field, you take Bryce Harper out of their lineup and it's just like it crumbles.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like taking Freddie Freeman out of the lineup in the Braves in the past. And, you know, the Braves even had a couple more guys like an Acuna most of the time. The Phillies really don't have a second guy who's even close to Bryce. I mean, he was playing already with the screwed up ligament in his elbow. So that's why he was DHing. So now he's got the broken thumb. I mean, this has been a hell of a year for the guy.
I just quickly read before I got on here that he's going to try and have surgery and come back and play this year. Do you not just have thumb and elbow surgery at the same time and come back as a new man?
Well, he's not going to come back from the elbow surgery this year.
What is he? What's wrong with his elbow? Is it ligament?
He's Tommy John, is what they're saying.
I mean, at some point, you got to have that, or you just DH in the rest of your career.
That's exactly right. You're taking away 50% of what makes him such a good player because he's just such a good defender as well.
Right. I mean,
he's
got to make a decision because he could come back from the thumb in maybe 3 or 4 weeks, maybe, or 4 or 5 weeks, maybe. And if they think they can do it, you know, but he might look at it realistically and go, are we a playoff team and are we gonna?
It's the top thumb, right?
I think they can sneak in, but
because it kind of hit him this way and went back that way. Is that what happened?
fractured it. Yeah, I don't think it did tear the ligament. It wasn't the ligament, so it's not as bad as like Darno last year. It didn't tear the ligament. It was a broken bone. So just from a fastball.
Either way, though, you come back in 5 or 6 weeks and the team's out of it, or you don't make the playoffs. Like, why not just get it all fixed now? And
you wasted another month. You're ready
for spring training if you have Tommy John as a position player.
But is he definite for Tommy John? Does he definitely need it?
I mean, it could. They told me I needed Tommy John, and I didn't have the surgery for like 7 years. This was like 2005.
Yeah, I don't know if he's.
So he might be able to just get it healthy and just throw with a torn ligament.
Especially if he could keep DH. Especially if he could keep DHing while it heals, theoretically.
Voltaren.
A couple of cortisone shots and a Voltaren, it'll be fine.
How many cortisone shots you get in your career, Moilo?
Couple.
Couple dozen.
Just a couple, just to get through. It was almost like appointments. It was like, get me at the start of the season, middle of the season, and then playoff run. I'll be ready to go. Don't worry about it.
Moilo, were you like Johnny Venters? He told me one time, and Eric has talked about this before too. Johnny said that it took him a few weeks after the season started to come off the anti-inflammatories that he took all year.
Oh yeah, you can't walk.
Yeah. I would come cold. I'd do cold turkey. So it'd be just because your guts are so. I'd take a Prilosec every day to try and counter the fact that I was taking a Voltaren every day. So it was kind of. It was just a uppers and downers, man. It was.
This is why everybody throws 100 now, Dave, is because when our arms hurt, we just took more pills. Yeah. And guys now, when their arm hurts, they go on the IL and they work with an extremely qualified, physical therapist. And then they get in the weight room and they get everything functioning perfectly and they come back better. We just kept playing.
We wouldn't let it get to that point.
The usage patterns now are so different than they were when you guys were pitching. Respect. I mean, Snit never uses a guy 3 nights in a row. I mean, never.
I can't respect 2 days in a row and you need a day off. We didn't get a guaranteed day off unless we pitched 4 in a row.
Yeah, Snit never does that.
And then it was still like emergency only. And you probably warmed up 3 games before those 4 in a row.
You don't see guys throwing 90 innings relief anymore.
But you know what's crazy, and I hate to say this, but the depth is better in every bullpen now, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're not heavily relying on 3 or 4 guys.
Yeah,
true. You've got 5 or 6 guys that you can have confidence in to go out there and actually get an out or get a couple of outs, whereas not to throw shade at anyone that was in a bullpen, but there wasn't just the depth or the trust, I guess. There wasn't the trust there, if anything. Maybe the talent was there, just not the trust.
Well, yeah, because teams wouldn't spend to make a deep bullpen when they had starters going 7, 8 innings.
When I was there either, Dave, let's be honest.
It's very true. That's what I'm talking about. It wasn't until the last, till they got Will Smith was the first time the Braves really have spent on bullpen other than the closer. Yep. He was the first guy other than a closer to get money from the Braves.
Yeah.
Even then, most of the closers were 1 or 2 year deals.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they signed him 3 years, $40 million, that was Alex saying, okay, things are different now. I'm building a bullpen.
Yeah.
But you have to.
Well, I think they realized too that if you don't throw your guys 6 days a week, you get to September and you could throw them 2 innings and they're still fresh.
Correct. Yeah. And then you get off days in the playoffs.
Yep.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I wanted to stop. I was going to start today before Kinley went on the IL. I was going to start with Dansby. Because, I mean, what this guy's doing, man, it's pretty extraordinary. The strides that this guy's made this year, he has gone from being a solid player who does everything right, intangibles guy, a winner, quote unquote, to be in right now, he's a star. I mean, he's putting up star numbers, which I didn't know that Dansby was capable of doing for more than a few weeks at a time.
That's what I was just going to say. We'd seen it, but not for an extended period of time.
Yeah, he'd get hot for 2 weeks, cold for 2 weeks.
Someone said to me the other day, he found something. It's the consistency, right? That's the key. But
more than 2 months now.
Difference between a big leaguer and a superstar is consistency. And someone told me the other day is that the difference between a superstar and a Hall of Famer is there's no down season. Was it in the press box when someone said that? There's just no down seasons. You look at their baseball reference page and it's consistent right the way through. Well, that's what we're seeing with Dansby right now is just consistency everywhere.
Yeah.
He'll have two bad at bats and then somehow come through in the clutch, or he'll make an error like he did the other night and he'll hit a homer to tie the game. Like he's just doing things that we're not used to seeing for such an extended period of time.
Now that's his slump is only a couple of games. I mean, he'll have a couple, maybe go 0-for, but the next night he gets two or three hits, and the power now, the up the middle and oppo power now is real.
Oh yeah.
He's not that big either. He's not that big guy. He's just getting older, knowing what he's doing up there, and stronger. But he's still not a big guy. But he's got big guy power.
He can't be more than 205,
right?
You know, and he's hitting balls 430, 440 to dead center.
Yeah,
I think that's
part of the park.
What you were saying is, and you know, that's always what I was told is like the difference between a triple A guy and a big league guy, or a big league guy and an all star, or an all star and a Hall of Famer is how quick they can nip it in the bud when they have a slump or a problem, you know, how fast they can get into a rut and then get out of it. And it seems like Dansby, whatever he figured out this time, he's been able to hold on to it for months instead of just a couple weeks.
So it's like Kyle Wright too. The difference between Kyle Wright this year is his ability to fix himself quick enough that it doesn't rely on someone else saying, "Hey Kyle, we need you to come out here and, you know, extend, get like it's," he's like, "What am I doing? Got it. Fix it. Let's go."
Yeah. Cause he does come out sometimes in the first inning or two, you're questioning, you know, is this going to be a good start or a bad start? And then he just locks in the third, you know, like he's able to, that's a real legit big leaguer is able to find it mid game or mid at bat or at bat to at bat, not game to game or week to week. And it seems like Dansby, I mean.
And Kyle in the past was gone in the third inning when that happened.
Well, when it happened, because he didn't have that ability to just in game.
Correct it.
And then your next start, you're going out sitting on a six spot and you start off the same way and it's here we go again instead of, "Oh, I know what I did wrong last time. Let me fix that real quick."
Dansby right now, dudes, is tied for seventh in F-War, Fangraphs War, with Kevin Gausman, who Gausman just moved up to time last night with his seven scoreless innings against the Red Sox.
That guy's unbelievable.
The Red Sox are hot, and he had 10 strikeouts, seven scoreless innings against them, man. Gausman,
what did he do when he, like, I know he's eliminated the two chain. Is he still throwing a split and a change, or is it just the changeup and a slider now? I feel like he's added and taken something away. I can't remember. I should look it up. But
I think he got rid of the breaking ball in general. I mean, it's just split.
Yeah, he was really good for a while with the Giants, too, after he left the Braves. Remember, he was having that great season with them.
Yep.
But he's gone to another level even this year. I mean, he's just – this guy's incredible right now. So, Gausman is the top pitcher and I don't know all about F4. I don't know how to compute the shit.
Just the difference between Fangraphs War and
Baseball Reference War. But there is in how it's computed, though, I don't know. But Gausman is the top pitcher in total F4 now. Max Fried is tied with Sandy Alcantara and Aaron Nola for second among pitchers. They got 2.7 F4. All right. But Dansby, though, is seventh, tied with Gausman, seventh in F4. And the guys ahead of him are all absolute studs of the game. I mean, like in the last few years, they're like the best players in the game.
Yeah.
You got Machado is first, leads the majors. He's followed by Devers. Goldschmidt. And these are all one name guys. You know their names. Goldschmidt, Judge, Jose Ramirez, and Mike Trout. Those are the only guys ahead of Dansby Swanson.
That's a pretty good list.
I mean, that's phenomenal.
Oh, man. It's hard to put into words. Like, it's hard to even. And even if you listen to him in an interview, it's not like overdone with his, like, he's just seems to be so at peace right now is the best way.
Always like that.
Yeah. Totally.
Like he's at peace. He's just, this is what I'm doing. I'm confident in myself. He was a number one pick for fuck's sake. He was always going to do something. Like there's a reason why the Diamondbacks took him 1-1.
Yeah.
And
he's a winner, man. I mean, it's a cliche, but he's a winner. There's no doubt.
Can't measure it, so you can't. It's not real.
And we were talking about this last time, Marlo.
Mal's been huge for him too. His girlfriend Mal. Yeah. She's like a big time athlete too. Yeah. And those two together, man, I think they really help each other. Yep.
Yeah. Great.
Marlo, we talked about this last time, how he seems like he's just a guy that you know, when we've watched him, you've watched guys go through their struggles, right? Yeah. So it's harder to believe when they do this. But if he hits free agency, any team that's watching this year and the last year, like, they're going to take a 2-year sample, where when he's your guy, you're looking at like a 6-7 year sample.
Sure.
If he hits free agency like this,
yeah,
he's going to, every single team is going to be drooling over him.
I mean,
and they should be.
And he's got some intangibles going too.
Yes.
I mean, he's a winner, like we said. He's a solid defensive player, even when he's struggling at the plate. He's got a great reputation in the clubhouse. Everybody gets along with him. I mean, he's not a bad guy to have on your posters and everything, you know?
Right. And he's already been through the struggle of being the kid on a poster and not being able to handle it already. Right. So he goes to a new city. If he does go to a new city, Braves fans, I'm not saying he's going to a new city.
Yep.
If he does go to a new city and he's got his posters everywhere, is it going to be like, I've done this before. This is cool. Yep. Let's go.
And you know he wants to stay. I mean, we said that about Freddie too, and Freddie did want to stay. We'll get to him in a minute. But Dansby has so much stuff wrapped up in the Atlanta thing. He's got this marketing. He's got that company that produces athletic gear and shit. I mean, he's like all Atlanta. I mean, he really builds his brand around Atlanta. Now, obviously, he can change that in a heartbeat, but
it would also be a tough sell for someone not from Atlanta for him to do that in another city. Like, if he's trying to do that in Cincinnati,
Chicago.
Right?
Like, yeah, what up, Cincy?
That's not going to work. Yeah, you still have to market to Atlanta and just play in the city where he is.
Again, nothing against Cincinnati. Okay, beautiful city.
Let's go and take over Milwaukee real quick.
Yeah, we talked about it. They don't have – I mean, they don't have a shortstop ready. Grissom is going to be a stud, but he's still a year – he's a couple years away at least.
He's had a big June too.
He's a stud.
He's had a big June. He's in Rome though. Like, give him a couple of at-bats in Mississippi at least.
Are you like me with prospects, Marlo, where you're like, we'll see when they get
up? Yeah, but this guy would have traded Harris away, man. He would have traded Harris
Marlo
away.
Marlo would have?
No, you.
No, not that far. You told me he's the best player ever.
I
question it. I want to see what they do when they get called up.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing that I've had to do is because of my podcast, I'm having to learn about the prospects that are coming up. So I get to hear about guys that are not just picks out of college, but we do that as well. But I hear about guys that are like having big weeks or big months that could be on the cusp.
Oh yeah, you could speak to Grissom then.
Yeah, with Grissom had a big month. Big June. Yeah, like he's
shortstop.
Exactly.
Athletic.
Yeah.
Really good athlete. He's got a body, man. He can.
He's going to be one of those. Probably be in Double A by the end of the year, and then see how he handles that, and then big league spring training next year. It'll be that progression.
I mean, that's where Harris was last year. Because I'm not comparing him to Harris, because that Harris is.
But I've been hearing about Michael Harris's swing and hit tool for a long time. Then he become this elite defender as well. So that was the difference on Michael Harris. And I am one guy that thought after the first couple of at-bats, I'm like, man, this might be a bit early.
Yeah, but
again, adjustments that he's been able to make quick
enough. Alcantara, the first.
Welcome to the big leagues. He's the greatest pitcher in the game right now.
Yeah.
Go get him.
His first game.
Yeah. And they're all like this, kid, so get ready.
I think Frenchie went up to him afterwards and said, hey, don't worry, they're not all like that.
I hope so.
But Dansby is in some pretty heady company now. And then after Swanson and Gausman, they're followed by Bogarts, Yordan Alvarez, Tommy Edman, some guy named Otani, Betts, and Arenado. Those are the guys following them in F4.
Dang. Who was after Bogarts?
Yordan Alvarez.
And after him?
Tommy Edman from the Cardinals.
Tommy Edman is the guy that I'm like. And
he's having a phenomenal year.
He's second baseman, right?
Yeah, phenomenal year.
Wow.
Yeah, he's having a career year this year. But going back to Dansby, he said after his first 14 games were so bad, He told Maria Torres, our reporter, that he looked at his numbers, he'd want to puke when he looks at them. They were so bad. His first 14 games, he hit 143 with a 432 OPS. He was the worst hitter in the majors. He had 22 strikeouts and 49 at bats in those first 14 games.
Yeah. I called a lot. I was working a lot of them. So
yeah. He looked lost, man.
I got full seasons I want to puke when I look at.
He was so late on fastballs early on that it was looking bad for a little while. But
that was the adjustment he said he made.
Yeah.
But yeah, he said he was late on everything.
I didn't feel like it was an adjustment that wasn't going to come. It was just, I felt like he was just underdone, like a lot of people were.
Yeah, spring training was short.
Yeah.
Yep. So he came back from L.A. He told me he came back from L.A. because that was 14 games through the L.A., San Diego, L.A. trip. They had an off day. He came back from L.A. He said he reset in his mind. He said, I'm starting a new season.
You have to
Somebody pointed out how late he was, and he looked at the two pictures on how late he was, said he was getting started after the pitcher was already in his delivery instead of before he started his load as soon as he was waiting until he saw the ball, basically, and before he was getting started, just a split second early, but he said it made all the difference in the world.
That's absolutely baffling to me that timing is such a big part of a guy's swing, and it was so far off, and he wasn't able to notice that difference in himself. It just
shows how hard the game is.
100%. And I've done that as a pitcher so many times, and it just makes me realize that we're not alone and that everyone's dealing with the same shit. Because there's been days where I'm like, why am I here? Like, I cannot get anybody out today. I may as well just go home.
God, I look at seasons and I can see my mechanics for like 3 months, and stepping away from it now and looking at it.
Right.
Like, what is that garbage? You know, they talk about wanting to puke. I see how messed up everything is. And from the outside now, I could fix it in a day.
Yeah. Exactly.
But when you build that muscle memory and you kind of just get, I don't want to say you get like complacent, but you've done it so much that that's what's comfortable. And it's hard to break what's comfortable. When he switched and started getting ready earlier, it probably felt like he was a year early.
So
he was right on time.
Here's the way I explain it, right? You get in zones where you don't have to think about anything. Yes. And that's the problem, because you go 3 weeks where you haven't had to think. Yeah. And all of a sudden you throw one pitch and you're like, oh, that wasn't the same. And then
right, it cut.
Bang. You're like, oh, shit.
Then you get the yips. I do that in golf.
Yeah.
One bad swing.
So then you have to think about, and then you overthink about everything.
Yep. Yeah. I had nights where I was throwing wiffle balls to my wife at 4 a.m. in the parking garage trying to fix shit. And I'd be like, I found it. I would swear I found it. And I'd get to the field the next day. Trash. Same garbage I did yesterday. Can't fix it.
I've taken a lot of sliders off my ankles from O'Flaherty. Don't worry about that. Trying to fix it.
No, those are good ones. Those are the ones.
I know. That's what pisses me off. It's great. Yeah, no, stop it.
So after Dansby Post hits 143 with a 432 OPS in his first 14 games, here's what he's done since then. Beginning with that next game, they had an off day. Then they start the next game against the series against Miami. He has hit in 60 games. Exactly 60. He's hit 339, 401 OBP, almost as high as his OPS was in the first 14, 965 OPS in 60 games, 10 doubles, a triple, 13 homers, 41 ribbies, 11 stolen bases, and 14 attempts.
And he's like, that's like Troy Tulowitzki numbers in his prime.
Terrific. Right. 36 and 24, the Braves are in that 60 game stretch.
But it doesn't look like it's a streak. It looks like it's repeatable.
Yeah. I was talking to Adam Duvall about that.
He's not catching lucky breaks or anything. He's hitting the ball hard.
He's hitting the ball. He's killing the ball.
Even his outs are hard. Like, his piss rods to shortstop are like 111 off the bat.
Yeah, Adam Duvall, I said that to Adam. I said, it doesn't seem like he's – in the past, he'd have a couple of games or a couple of weeks where he was hot. And then Adam said, yeah, he's been the rock there at the top of the lineup. We need that guy with some runners on now. But he agreed on how this doesn't look like his hot streaks in the past. He said, I think the same thing. I don't know. He's just kind of fell into the role of solidifying that top of the order. This isn't a stretch where he's just hot. This is a stretch where he looks like he's figured something out. He's sustaining it. The stretch he's been on, whew, he said, it's been impressive. That's what Duvall said about it.
You know how easy it is for an agent to sell that to?
Yeah.
Here's the adjustment he made. Here's the day he made it. Exactly. This is who he is now.
Yeah.
Adam made a great comparison. He said he compared him to he said it's like he's figured something out. Like the way he goes, he talks about how your body moves, how all the body moves, how it syncs up, and he compared it to Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, he said if he had that.
Yeah, he said if you can get to it, move efficiently, and he's figured something out. He goes, I look back at Josh Donaldson, the way his body moves, it just looks like it moves a little bit differently than everybody else. And he said Dansby has shown that you don't have to be 250 to hit big numbers, big power numbers. And he's been hitting them to the big part of the ballpark. So it's been cool to watch. But he compared him to Josh and how their bodies move so fluidly. He's a little older than you think. He's 28, yeah.
That's when JD figured it out.
Yeah.
Because JD was kind of a late bloomer, and he figured it out in like 14, 15. He was 28, 29 and rode that for won an MVP the next year.
Look at Justin Turner.
Yeah, Turner. Guys figure things out. I mean, it can click, and you can ride that and hold on to that feeling for seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that's I would be surprised if Dansby regresses to what he was before this season. Now, I'm not saying he's going to do this the time, but I don't think he's going back to what he was either.
Even if he falls in the middle and plays his defense and plays and runs the bases the way he does.
Yeah, guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show. Speaking of phenomenal improvement, or this guy has just been phenomenal, period.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Spencer Strider?
Yes.
Excellent.
I was going to ask you about Spencer Strider, Moilo.
Yeah.
Goes six innings against the Dodgers for the first time in his brief MLB career. But he went six scoreless, pitch for pitch, with the best guy who's probably the Cy Young front runner right now, Tony Gonsolin.
Yep.
Gives up five hits, no walks, seven strikeouts in six innings, threw 64 strikes in 95 pitches. And that was coming off his worst start 5 days earlier. It was only bad outing, really, 5 days earlier.
Yep.
I mean, this guy, I could not be more impressed than I have been with Spencer Strider.
And no.
Mentally and physically.
Yeah.
He's sharp.
The way that I've explained it is the biggest difference for me, and we said it earlier, it's the ability to make the adjustments so quickly. We've seen guys come up and just make the same mistakes for four straight starts and then get sent down.
Yeah.
He came out and said after the last start, there was just something off. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel unhealthy. I just didn't feel it. And we all know what that is. Yeah, we all know. 112 pitches or 108 pitches, whatever it was, the pitch. Exactly what I said as well.
Like going over 100, like eight pitches the one before.
There is so much. You feel the
same. You hit the same button and something different happens.
There is so – it's like dead arm. It's like everyone knows – everyone that's experienced dead arm knows what it's like to look at the radar gun and to be a couple of clicks down and go, ah, man, I'm just off today. Like something's off. It happens.
Yeah.
Works his ass off, figures it out, finds some feel again, and just goes out against our rival and was unreal. He's just – I love the fact that he – and I said this – he wants to be great, and you can tell that he wants to be great. You can see it already. Yeah. That he has that in him. I didn't have that in me. I just wanted to be around. He wants to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's driven, man. He leaves no stone unturned.
Happy to be here.
Just wanted to show up.
They keep this up. I mean, they keep anything close to this up, him and Harris. They could be both in the top three or four of Rookie of the Year. They keep this up. Kind of like the year that Kimbrel and Freeman finished 1-2.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine. There's obviously other candidates across the league as well, but what a great story to, you know, the kid had one outing, two outings before the playoffs last year. And then same with Dylan Lee. Like these two kids, they obviously saw something last year that was great. They had their great years, but.
Yeah. He and Dylan Lee both debuted that last weekend of the season.
Yeah. And they've continued. And I just love that it's been consistent to this point for Michael Harris too. A couple of bad games where he punches out three times.
Yeah,
fine.
He's
in the nine hole, man. It's like the Spencer with being the fifth starter. We get locked in on having these guys have to be Max Fried.
Yeah,
he's your fifth starter. Give us five innings every week, and we are happy as a pig in poo, man. That's great.
Yep.
And he and Harris were third and four. Harris third, and him fourth round draft picks.
So awesome.
Yeah. And the splits, I was just looking at this. I didn't realize how close the splits have been. He's actually been tougher on lefties. Lefties are hitting 188 with a 503 OPS against him. Righties 185 with a 509 OPS.
He lives up in the zone.
Bellinger took a swing off him the other day. It was a fastball kind of like middle in, and he swung at it like it was
800 miles an hour.
Exactly. And I'm like, man, that's got to be a tough at bat. Like there's no deception in the delivery. It's like, here I am standing sideways, the quad god, and then up and go. It's like, it's just must be fuzz coming at you.
It's got to have some high spin or just the trajectory from not being a super tall guy, something about it. I mean, you can watch the swings he gets on when he misses. I mean, he misses right down the middle and blows it by guys.
Yeah.
You could tell they're looking heater. You know, there's something so nice about having a fastball you can live on versus having to trick guys. You know, a fastball that's your out pitch and you can just blow guys away with is, it's just comforting when you're on the mound.
589 OPS by righties. I had that wrong. But, yeah, it's like lefties and righties. Doesn't matter. He's got 41 strikeouts and only 8 walks against lefties, 38 and 14 against righties.
I think the fact that the strikeout numbers are staying the same, that he's having to go through lineups more than once, is encouraging too, because I thought the strikeout numbers were huge, obviously, coming in for an inning or two innings, maybe 3 days. But there's video out now. There's no more secrets. Yeah. Like, this is – it's
coming at you.
You know what he's got and you know what he's bringing. So, yeah, just be ready. But good on him, man.
He's got a 3.68 ERA in his 6 starts, 42 strikeouts, 11 walks, 29 and 30 innings. But that includes that bad game against the Giants when he gave up 6 earned and 3 2/3 with a dead arm. When is he?
And this is Velo, him having to transition to a starter midseason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Velo was down a couple of ticks in that game.
Yeah.
And in his other 5 starts, 2.10 ERA, 38 strikeouts, and 25 2/3 innings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sold.
Yeah. Yeah. And he wasn't even at the point where he transitioned. He had been in the bullpen for almost 2 months. So he wasn't even stretched out anymore like he was he had to get stretched out again while starting.
I think he had an outing where he got up to 70 pitches about 3 weeks before he started starting. But that, the 3 weeks have gone. So his outings after that were 1 and 2 innings.
Yeah. Anyway, he's been a stud.
It's been a revelation, Dave.
He has been phenomenal. Moylo, what do you think Matzik's return can mean? Obviously, it can mean a whole lot more with Kenley out, but what can he mean? Because, it made sense. You know, early on, we're kind of worried about, does he have the yips? Because he had the game where he walked a lot of guys. Then it comes out with a shoulder impingement. That makes sense.
Because of how small the misses were, it was like, it wasn't like he was, it looked like a guy that was trying to pitch through some shit.
Right. The whole time. To the backstop. Yeah.
It wasn't like he was like dotting balls and spiking stuff. It was just missing. And it felt like it was just not able to finish or not able to get the all his arm path all the way through. Now
he was pitching through pain.
And if he gets to the point where he can be an option, like it'll allow Minta some rest days. That's for sure. Yeah. Because he's been going pretty tough, but he was so dominant for so long. And if he's healthy again, we need a right-handed arm. I know that. It opens up that glaring. You know, McHugh's going to be good back there, but I think we might need a big right-handed trade acquisition arm.
I think that's the move they need to make at the deadline. I think that's really the only obvious move they need to make to me.
Kirby Yates is coming back. I get that.
Yeah.
And maybe if Soroka comes back and you throw Strider back there, I get that.
Right.
But again, that's all ifs.
Right.
And it's, I think that's the one thing that is, and I'm not saying it's missing. I'm just saying that is what would be the add. Yeah.
The other one is, we went over Dylan Lee's numbers, 0.590 ERA, the whip. So, I mean, he's moved himself up into a high leverage role now. And with Kenley out, that'll be even more so. Do you realize this team does not have a 3-game losing streak yet?
Someone told me that the other day. Yeah.
It's a record for the franchise, like all time, going back into the 1800s. They've never gone this deep into a season without a 3-game losing streak.
Is that right?
That's pretty phenomenal, man, when you think about it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the, early on, they weren't getting consistent starting pitching. So that really does.
Yeah.
For that run, they obviously got a run of some really nice starting pitching, but man, you got to be doing some good things,
yeah,
to be able to sustain that for this long into the season.
now they face the Phillies, and the matchups are, you got Charlie Morton going against their stud, Zach Wheeler tonight. He's an animal, man. Atlanta guy. Then you got Kyle Wright going against Ranger Suarez. Braves do really well against lefties. They got that one on Wednesday. And then you finish it up with Ian Anderson against another stud, Aaron Nola. So the Phillies have got their two sub-3 ERA guys going in the first and third games in this series with Wheeler and Nola. So it ain't going to be easy, man. You got some tough matchups there.
Yeah, but I like where Charlie's been the last two outings a lot. Yep. Even 2.5 outings. I'll give him 2.5.
Yeah.
So I like that. We've seen Wheeler enough.
Wheeler and Nola, yeah.
If Wheeler's on, obviously he's tough. And Nola shoved it up our
proverbial
last time he pitched against us in Atlanta. So it's, they're going to want to make a statement too. That's the other thing. They're going to want to come out there and say, we're not done without Harper, that sort of stuff. And the only way to do that is to probably starting pitch their way through the series.
Yeah. They are 39-35. They're 3 games behind the Braves. So they're actually closer to the Braves than the Braves are to the Mets. The Braves are 5 behind the Mets. Phillies are 18-5 with a 3.53 ERA in June. But, of course, they're now without Bryce Harper. They've lost 4 of their last 7. They're kind of in a run like the Braves are. Braves are, haven't been that kind of a funk, but they've, you know, they both were phenomenal early until like the last week and lost a few games. But Braves are 2nd in the majors in OPS in June, 837. Phillies are 6th, 765. Again, that was with Harper. And the Braves have got 48 homers in June, man. 2nd to the Yankees. And the Yankees playing a little league ballpark in right field. So,
and they got some boppers.
They got some boppers. And then they got, you know, Judge can hit a ball, can get hit a ball off the handle and hit it out in right field in that ballpark.
He might hit 60 this year.
But he's phenomenal. He's their MVP, obviously. He's going to be the MVP in the AL unless he gets hurt. Soroka, if he's ready, and you addressed him earlier, but if he's ready at some point after the All-Star break, what do you see? I mean, I don't think they go to 6-man rotation because you don't take Freed. You don't get him less starts. Yeah,
you can't take starts away from
Freed. And Kyle Wright, the way they're pitching, you know, unless things changes, they could get tired or whatever. But
maybe you piggyback him for the first – I mean, I know this isn't the minor leagues, but maybe you just piggyback those two, depending on what the rest of your bullpen looks like. But
right,
trade deadline's coming as well.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't think – I think the team – I think the the bullpen that we're looking at right now will be different come August 1st, that's for sure. Or August, whatever the date is now. Is it still the same date?
Or has it been
pushed back? I don't know either.
It's a little later. Okay. Not much. It's August 2nd. Is that it?
All right.
Something like that. Hey, last thing I want to ask you about is Acuna.
Yeah. What did you hear today? Did you hear anything today?
Not anything yet. But, okay. I mean, he comes rolling in Sunday. We're in the clubhouse. He comes rolling in on a medical scooter. So you're immediately like, oh, shit, this was worse than they said last night. Turns out he asked for the scooter. The MRI, X-ray, everything was negative. It's a bruise. But bone bruises can be painful.
On your foot.
He said he couldn't put pressure on it, so he wanted to just take the pressure off. But we've also seen Acuna heal, like, overnight where it looked terrible and he was in the game. So I'm not going to be shocked if he's in the lineup tonight. I'm kind of not expecting it, but it's not going to surprise me if he is.
I'm gonna call out a former teammate. I'm not going to call him out by name, but there was a line drive back at him during a game, and it was not very hard hit, but it hit him in such a way that he kind of lost function of the lower part of his leg. And we thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be terrible. Like, almost carried off the field, wheelchaired onto the plane, travel day, that sort of thing. Next day, he's walking around like nothing happened.
It's like Avalon. Like,
we're like, listen, you cannot have an exit like that and then the next day show up even walking.
Paul Pierce.
So, but maybe it's like one of those things where it just caught him in such a way that for 24 hours he couldn't move, and he shows up today. And the flight will be interesting. But
yeah, they had day off, extra day off. Obviously, that's a big.
Were you not there for Avalon's cramp?
Oh yeah, he looked like a sniper.
You didn't see that, Marlo?
He went down.
What year was that?
We thought he'd blown out his 13. ACL.
He went to throw a pitch and just went down like he got sniped, and he's laying on the ground, pounding on the mound. just dying.
He's carted it off.
It's the Achilles.
Oh, God. He ripped the hamstring off the
bone. He was carted off the field. They brought the cart out.
They drove him off the field in the bullpen cart. And even in the bullpen cart, he's just hammering the cart. He's just the most painful thing of his life. I pitched like the seventh or eighth inning, and I come in the clubhouse, and I'm like, dude.
So sorry.
I'm so sorry, man. I'm like, you've been having a great year. You're big for this team. We're going to have a hard time, you know, filling these innings, man. I hope everything, you know, I hope you come back quick. And he's sitting there drinking a Gator. He goes, I'm fine. It's just a cramp. I was like, a cramp? First cramp of his life at 25 years old.
They told him he couldn't drink so many Red Bulls. He was drinking like three Red Bulls for an appearance. So you got to slow down on those.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it looked like he'd blown out his knee or worse.
I maybe thought career-ending injury, and it was just his first cramp.
What do you make of, if anything, of these Acuna numbers? He had hit in a 25-game stretch through May 6th, or from May 6th. That was his seventh game off the IL.
Mm-hmm.
25 games. He had 348, seven doubles, six homers, 1,062 OPS over a 25-game stretch. His last 12 games, he's hit 200, 10 for 50, one extra base hit, two ribbies, a 533 OPS.
I think a lot of that had to do with him having that first stretch where he played right field for two straight weeks in a row. He was on his feet every day. He didn't have a day off. And then we had a couple of scheduled days off. But even to that point, it was like, it was his first real grind. So I don't hold anything. Like, I don't, he is just,
he's special.
He's so special, man. Oh, yeah. It's just, oh, I don't,
know that.
It's just, there's going to be, I don't think there's going to be a time where we don't look back at Acuna, especially when if he can come back from this injury in a couple of days and just be himself. When he hit that ball, was it against the Dodgers or was it, it must have been against San Fran, but he hit that tank 411 feet or whatever it was. I was like, okay, well, and that was after that bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
He'll be just fine.
When he first came back, he DH'd some. He had an off day here. There, I mean, and then he went to playing every day faster than they said he was going to. So,
he really did a lot quicker than I was because they were talking about no playing on travel days and not playing
until the 12 month anniversary of the surgery.
Yeah,
which is we haven't even got there yet.
No, but he obviously feels great and looks great. And is the more he was out there, the more comfortable I got with him out there, and the more comfortable he got out there.
He's running better than he ever has.
Yeah.
Quicker. He's faster than ever.
Yeah.
So,
Dave, we didn't talk about Freddie's tears. His whole.
We didn't even get to that. What was your take on the? We knew it was going to be emotional. Freddie's an emotional guy. Some people aren't emotional, and they could have just gone through that whole thing without crying.
Yep.
But Freddie's emotional.
I couldn't. Freddie's emotional and I feel like. I think the biggest thing for me is that Freddie had a vision for his career.
Yep.
And that vision got derailed in a 24-hour period that he wished he'd had back, I think.
And it wasn't his doing. No. It was almost like he allowed it to happen when he could have stopped it, but it was too late when he realized it.
Exactly. And that's what was eating at him. But I also think that Freddie Freeman being Freddie Freeman, can you guys hear that? That's my lawn person. Can you guys hear that?
A little bit. Not bad.
Okay. He knows now that it's he's a Dodger and he's going to be a Dodger for the next 6 years, and he's going to try and win as many championships for LA as he can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that initial, I think while he's obviously dealt with this mentally, how disappointed it is that it was basically taken out of his hands because his agent didn't do a very good job, and Freddie should have made it clear to him, whatever happens, get the best deal we can there, even from if it's less than I want to stay. I don't want to go anywhere. He should have made that even more clear, obviously. But his agent did not do him any favor. Didn't do a good job with it, with giving Alex an ultimatum.
And if you're questioning if he wants to come back, I mean, you could fake a few tears, but you can't fake leaving the room because you can't speak.
And when he came home to Atlanta and he's surrounded by everything, he's reminded of why he wanted to be here forever.
What it was,
Then it's just like, God, how did this happen?
And, you know, realizing that it's over.
Right. That it's not – there's really – it would take something extraordinary to change it, you know. And now that you've got Olsen signed to an 8-year deal, it'd be one thing if Olsen wasn't signed to an 8-year deal. No, but
you're not coming back.
No, you're not coming back. Not unless you're DHing. You're not coming back.
Yeah.
So, and maybe you do late in the contract, you come back as a DH, but that's
I was thinking he might finish his career with the Braves. You know, kind of like a guy like B-Max Dunn, certain guys.
Yeah, and I could see that happening, but that's a long time.
Not during this contract.
Yeah, he's not coming off first base for a long time.
No.
Nah.
So, yeah, and I think we're going to see what happened with his disappointment in his agent. We're going to find out real quick just how disappointed he was in his agent.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's not going to be his agent much longer, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't care if I was his agent. I mean, we got 6 years.
Yeah, he's getting his $8 million off this deal anyway. So,
yeah.
But that was
deals or something.
And I know Freddie just wishes he had said he'd picked up the phone and called Alex himself and go, hey, look, just to make sure before you do anything, just tell me, you know, instead of leaving it to his agent and trusting his agent.
But that's not how that works, man. No. I've never spoken to, or later in my career I did, but during that process, I wouldn't imagine that there's much after the initial meetings and presentations.
And the pandemic fucked everything up too. The lockout. Because they couldn't talk during the lockout. And Alex has been a stickler for all the details during because of what happened with Copy. Mm. Alex goes out of his way with free agency and all this to make sure the Braves don't do anything where they could get slapped again. So I can see where he would not have contacted them during the lockout when they weren't supposed to. Because, you could have got in trouble if the agent wanted to say, yeah, they were contacting us during the lockout, if Freddie ended up going somewhere else. So. Mm.
Yeah, you don't talk to your agent that much. You know, I mean, people think it's like he's texting you and calling you every day. He's not even getting calls on you every day. Things don't change
at all. The main guy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, my agent, my first time being a free agent, I talked to him like he sent me a text right after the season. Lots of interest, bro. 5 teams have already called you or called about you, and I didn't hear from him for 2 months. I was like, what about those 5 teams? Yeah. And then we hit like early December, and he's like, hey, this team wants to do 2 years. This team's talking about 2 years. And I said, both of them, I'm like, let's do it. I'm in. Mm, good. Right. Didn't hear from him again for 3 months.
This was such a big deal, though, for Freddie wanting to stay. So I think I know he regrets it now that he didn't just, because he had a great relationship with Alex. They texted, throughout the season on moves and stuff. And he could have just texted Alex and go, just to make sure where we are, if he knew it was that close.
Yeah.
Or Alex could have sent him a text going, hey, just so you know. Your agent gave me this ultimatum. I can't do it.
Something. If Alex had have done that and gone behind the agent's back directly to the client, then he's screwing himself anyway.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't really happen either.
So I know they're both. They're just kicking because Alex is not going to get caught with his pants down. And Olsen was the only backup. If he wasn't going to get Freddie, he had to get Olsen. And he's not going to let another team swoop in and offer a great prospect for Olsen, and they miss Olsen. And then he does have to take one of the ultimatum of the deal for Freddie and pay him more than they wanted to pay him. So,
and that's the way that it works out. Alex comes out looking like he looks great in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was the GM. He acted like a GM.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no doubt in my mind, 4 or 5 years down the road, they're going to be better off with Olsen. But you still hate Freddie not being here. I mean, it's still, he should have been a Brave, but they are, if you want to be cold about it. 5 years down the line, I think they're going to be better off than they would have been with Freddie.
Do you ever remember a free agent story similar to this? Like with this amount of emotion behind it?
No, I've never seen an athlete with that much emotion for 15 solid minutes where he was crying. You usually see that like at a retirement announcement for a few minutes, or maybe a guy's elected to do the Hall of Fame and he gets choked up for a couple of minutes. But then they kind of regroup.
Yeah,
Freddie could not. He had to bring a towel in there. First he came in and he saw John Kerber and he was like, he had to walk back out and he goes, give me a minute. He goes back outside for like 3 minutes. We're just sitting in there waiting for him to come back in. When he came back in, he had a towel and he kept his face in the towel like pretty much the whole time, wiping the tears away for 15 solid minutes.
And then did it again on the field.
And again, minutes before the game starts.
Yeah.
You got to think the Dodgers are going, holy shit, man.
I was wondering that, too. I was wondering how it's, because you want your guy to be a part of this, what we got going on now. When you go to a new team, nobody gives a shit about the old team. And a lot of guys make the mistake of – it's kind of hard because every story you have from the last 5 to 10 years involves this one organization. But guys kind of make that mistake and bring it with them, and they keep talking about it. Nobody at the new team cares about what was going on there. So I was wondering, how the – how the Dodgers feel when they're watching him just cry for this whole time.
I mean, we're the freaking Dodgers, man. We play in LA. Yeah.
Like, we're cool.
I do think now that they're leaving Atlanta, and this is obviously the first time back. I don't think this is all.
And the only time till the postseason, at least.
Frenchie said it could be closure. I think it could be closure. Everybody's going to have closure. But as I said, Freddie's going to go, and now it's go time. He's going to try.
I bet
to
he turns it on now.
Yeah.
And he already has started to turn it on. I mean, his numbers are climbing pretty quick. He's over 300, and he had a two-homer game the other day. So it's a good thing they're not in the same division, because that would be a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, especially because he'd start getting booed, I think, after the first.
Yeah, he's going to get booed next time he's here, because he was getting booed. And by the game three, it was all boos pretty much.
Was it really?
By game three, yeah. It was good natured boo. It was like boo in the uniform, as somebody said. Yeah. They still love it, but yeah, man, I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. And you felt bad for him, because you know he's so regretting that he didn't do something different. Because he would have gladly taken. He's going to end up making less money with LA with the tax rate and the money that's deferred, like $60 million deferred and all that. But he would have gladly taken less money to stay here if he came right down to it. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, if he knew it was going to be that close.
Right. But he's in a good spot. So, yeah. At least he's there, and he's not, you know, as Moilo said, he's not playing in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Whoa. Love Cincinnati.
Love that chili.
Love it.
All right. Well, we appreciate Moilo. Thanks for coming on with us, man.
Of course. It was fun. I'm not working these next three games, so I've got plenty of time on my hands.
They didn't lose while you and BJ were on the trip.
They didn't. You're right, Dave. And I'd like you to bring that up to the executives at Bally and let them know that I was undefeated in the booth, basically.
That was phenomenal, man. You guys joined. Frenchie goes on vacation, and the team just took off.
Yeah, it's what happens when we traded him, usually, too.
And then he came back, and they've been about 500, right, since he came back?
Yeah, something like that. He just doesn't bring the energy from the booth. I think I'm really affecting the game from up there.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Moilo. We appreciate it.
You got it, fellas. It's been awesome.
We'll talk to everybody start of next week.
Awesome.
755 is real. Always. We're out. Thanks.